I'm a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
All right, old school.
Well, this is kind of old school, isn't it? We're going back to the
beginning. Three-way on the phone, my God. We're approaching year, what is this for the podcast, year two?
Yeah, 5 days ago was our two-year anniversary. How neat is that?
It was, huh? Wow.
We're getting old.
That's hard. It's hard to believe.
It actually
is. I'm still around, and you haven't, like, canned me yet.
Well, we've been trying to, but you're like a... You're like a wart. It just doesn't go away. As you can hear, we have Rob. Hi, Rob. And we have Demetrius. Hi, Demetrius.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Hi, Demetrius.
We are going old school today. We don't have, we're a little bit short on people that were able to go today, and I have the Wisconsin State Pool Tournament tomorrow, so I don't really have time to reschedule for tomorrow. In fact, I don't have time to reschedule for tomorrow. So we are just going live in old school.
The WSPA.
Wisconsin
State Championships.
Pool Players Association.
And you are like, you've been on the championship, the winning Masters team for how many years that tournament?
We lost in the finals last year, Rob. Thanks for bringing it up.
Oh okay.
But we had won the previous 3 years.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is exciting. Makes me happy.
Is Mr. Steyer playing in that tournament this year?
He is not.
He's not playing. Okay.
I don't think he's played there for a couple of years now. I think he played, he definitely played the first year that we won the state title because we played his team in the finals. So he at least played 3 years ago, or I guess 4 years ago now. Well, I guess actually 5 years ago now.
Because I remember when he played, that 1 year he played, because we played their team.
Yeah. Well, let's get jumped in. We don't really have anything to clear up in the beginning, so let's just skip. Let's do shout-outs. You guys want to do shout-outs?
Why not? Let's do a couple shout-outs.
Well, go ahead, Rob. Why don't you start?
Okay, well, I've been thinking about this for a while now. We haven't had shout-outs for a little bit. And one pool player and promoter stands out in my mind, and that's John Stitch. And he's a pool promoter from Minnesota, and he's been doing this thing. I think I played in 1998. I played in a casino tournament in Wisconsin. It was the first one he had in Wisconsin at a casino down in Wisconsin Dells. And since then, he's made a living promoting pool and promoting pool tournaments in casinos throughout the upper Midwest. And I can't think of hardly anyone who's done more to bring players together in tournament formats than John. And he's a pretty skilled player, too, himself. Doesn't play a lot, but can play, and can play pretty well. And so that's my shout-out to John. Way to go, John. Keep it up. Do it as long as you can. I think the more folks like you out there that are doing this kind of thing, the better for the game. And there are people who don't particularly care for, you know, a team type of handicapping, but that's up for discussion maybe another time. I've heard pros and cons on that. I actually like it, the way he handicaps a team event. It gives a chance for the middle-of-the-road teams or even some lesser teams to actually win the event. And the team, if you want to load up a team, you can, but you're going to get, you know, you're going to have to be perfect, play perfect. So there you go. That's my shout out. John Stitch.
Yep. All right. I'll go second just because why not? I am going to give a shout out to a few people, predominantly Greg Andler, because of course he is the president of the WSPA, and there is a lot of work that goes into putting these events on, especially in COVID time. So a huge shout out to Greg and all the rest of the people, Jeff Martin, Dean Riesler, Bonnie Hunkins. I'm probably going to be missing a few. I am missing a few, but all of the board of the WSBA for putting on an event that I get to go sit at a booth for and hopefully sell some of my crappy merch. That will be fun. So there's my shout out. Demetrius, go ahead.
Yeah, I was kind of stuck. I'm just gonna shout out to you again, Nate, for keeping on running these virtual events. We've got the Battle of the Sexes coming up here, kicking off next week. And man, if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't really be playing at all. So that's gonna change. I've got a few events coming up, but I'm really excited to have something to kind of keep me going here through April. So thanks. I know it's a ton of work, man, and appreciate you running it.
Absolutely, they're fun to do. Thanks, Demetrius. Is that Rob clapping?
It's the fans in the background.
Oh.
do we have the fake audience?
I feel like we need
it's
to,
the
like,
applause machine.
I feel like whenever like Rob makes one of his crappy jokes, we need to have like one of those 1990s sitcom laugh tracks in the background from now on.
Yeah. Oh, man, yeah. I'm on board with that.
That could be fun. All right, well, let's just get jumped right into the podcast then. Yeah,
here we go.
There's not really much to talk about from the last week. There's a couple of regional events, some bigger regional events around. I don't know. I'm not really super interested in any of those. Demetrius, you don't know of anything else that was on the docket, right?
No, I've had my nose to grindstone training, so I've been kind of off the grid.
Yeah.
Well, good for you. Keep busy training. Yeah.
That's good. I had a guy. It's tough. What happens is I usually do Wednesday through Fridays for people to come up, and then occasionally, like once in a while, like I basically reserve one weekend a month where I can do one weekend a month. So whenever it lines up to where I do a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, followed by a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, then I've only got the 2 days in between, which is Monday, Tuesday, and you know, between the podcast and running around with kids and just a couple of other things. So I did the one Friday through Sunday last week, and then I got a gentleman coming in the morning. So it's been busy. So then I've got two days, which is actually this coming Saturday, Sunday, I'll have my kids. But if I could just carve out 4 hours each of those 2 days to kind of get prepared for this battle of the sexes, that's my goal also. But no, I've been checked out. I don't know what's going on in the pool world, but except for the one thing that is on our radar, which is what, Nate?
We are going to be talking extensively about Dennis Arcoyo versus Sky Woodward. This is going to be a bar box race to 150 10 ball. And it's over 3 days. I think it's being played at Sticks and Stones. Is that right? I guess let me actually look that up quick.
That's a good question where the location is, you know.
I think
in general, the further south it is, the more it favors Dennis. Just because, you know, if you could get it in, like, Louisiana or Florida or someplace with a lot of humidity, that would, you know, I don't think it's going to be a big factor. But the further south, the better it favors those Filipinos.
Yeah, and it is.
Oh, that's why. I was going to ask why. Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, it's Sticks and Stones, 10-ball winner break, rack your own, race to 150. It is being streamed by Rackham TV. I am going to get this out hopefully by about 1 o'clock Central American time. So today is the last day that you can actually get the early bird special, which is what I need to do. So I'm going to write that down right now because I am not paying $5 more, and I am going to watch the heck out of this. So today's the last day to do that. Make sure to go over and do it, and then tell them Queue It Up sent you, even though there's nowhere for you to actually say that. I just want to feel like I'm special, and maybe they'll send me a free pass next time if I get people over there. I'm just kidding. All right, so let's does anybody want to take it on first?
Starting date for this?
This is April 9th, 10th, and 11th. So it would be...
And what's the location? Yeah.
Sticks and Stones. It is in Sticks and Stones.
Well, where is that?
It's in Texas.
Oh, okay. Well, then,
where at?
There you
is
go.
It Dallas, Texas, I think? Maybe? I might be wrong there. I can Google it. Sticks and Stones. It is, apparently there's Sticks and Stones in one Waupun, Wisconsin. That's neat. Louisville, Texas, it seems to be.
So that's this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So, yeah, and it's basically Dallas. It's a suburb of Dallas, it looks like. So, yeah.
And the name again of the streaming?
This is Rackham TV. So does anybody want to take this on first? Anybody want to? Well, let's Demetrius, you said woof, so you get to start. Let's look at it kind of.
I was going to go last, but okay.
Well, I'll go first. How's that? The first thing, I guess, the big trend lines of it is who in the world literally can beat Sky Woodward on a bar table. So I mean, he's known in the U.S. as being the best bar table player. It's not necessarily close. I mean, Justin Bergman, I think, could give him a little bit of a run, but Justin and him refuse to play each other, which is fine. They're friends. But, he's kind of widely recognized as the best probably bar table player in the country. And the U.S. is really the only bar table country in the world. I mean, there's a few others, but I mean, for the most part, the U.S. is the king of the bar tables. So
you don't think Shane can get there with him on a bar table?
No, I mean, I personally don't. I mean, well, it's hard. I mean, it's really hard, right? That's kind of where I'm going to get to with it. It's kind of my little soliloquy that I'm on. This is the way that he's represented. Maybe I didn't make that clear. This is kind of how he's represented across the country as the best. And so then, of course, you're going to have people start stepping up and playing against him. He played against Didi in a small set. He played against Alex Pegulin and just beat the brakes off of him. I guess who else can step up to the plate? Josh, like Jason Shaw or Joshua Filler. I mean, those guys, they just don't play on bar tables. So can they get there even though they're better players? Yeah, maybe they can. Who knows? It's kind of hard to tell. But the obvious choices are going to be the Shane, which, as you just stated, and then Dennis. Alex Pegulin would have been the third person, I would say, that comes to mind right away. Alex didn't get anywhere close, so I think that's why this match even is probably getting all of the draw that it is. Currently, there is $380,000, $190,000 on each side. That's being bet, and that was verified with Sky. So I actually texted him the other day because I didn't really believe that. And then Sky's like, "Yeah, that's a thing." So that's backed up by Sky. I mean, there's a lot of money in this match. Clearly, there's people that think both sides are live, or there wouldn't be nearly 40% of $1 million in there. So now, I guess getting to what? Well, I guess before I even move on, that's kind of like the draw up to why this match happened. You know, who else in the world can beat Sky Woodward? It's basically, I guess, getting to the point where, there's maybe a handful of people. Like you said, Shane, maybe Dennis. We'll find out in a couple days. And I guess that's where I'm going to start. I don't think there's anybody else in the world personally. I mean, maybe like a Josh or a Fedor, but it's, I mean, they just don't play in bar boxes enough to really even have any semblance of how they would ever play on them. I mean, they're so talented that I suppose they're going to be favorites anyways. But anyways, let me get to actually my actual point here, which is at the end of the day, the bar tables are smaller, yes, but you still have circular balls putting in holes with a bull cue. And if Dennis is significantly better than Sky on a 9-foot table, why is 2 feet less going to be a huge difference? And as much as I love Sky and I love his game and I love his fight and I love his ferocity, I'll just leave it right there and pass it on to you guys. Dennis wins this, I think. So, Rob, you want to go next?
Yeah, I've never seen either one of these two fellas play on a bar table. Watched them both play on a 9-footer, but not the bar table. I think about bar tables as a place where there's lots of confusion, where there's lots of collisions, where there's lots of less space. You gotta be a different kind of player to play on a bar table than a big table. You can bun a big table, you got a lot of room to move around on. Not too many clusters of balls, and who's better at that, than Sky or Dennis? Kind of thing.
Dennis is a one pocket player, so I mean, he can at least handle it.
Yeah. So there's no question in my mind that Dennis is probably the better player between the two. He just come off of a big win, playing all kinds of world beaters, and in all kinds of games. I mean, not just 10-baller, 9-baller. It was 1-pie. It was all kinds of stuff, you know. And I think that was played on a, if I'm not mistaken, a bar table. Because I saw, well, DeLuna and Hennessy were playing. That was a bar table, I'm pretty sure. A bar table, diamond bar table. Do you know if they're playing on a Valley or diamond?
Diamond.
That'd be a diamond, yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna go all the way with Dennis as far as score. I think it's gonna be close.
We'll get to that.
I don't think he's gonna run away with this.
Yeah, we'll get to the scores in a little bit. Let's, Demetrius, you want to take over? Talk about it.
Yeah. So in terms of like, let's just talk about like tier one, two, and three pros. So you know, of course, Dennis, Shaw, Shane. You know, Filler, these guys are like tier one. I think that Sky is kind of in that second tier, which is kind of like that A minus, where they're not the favorite to get there with Shane or Filler in a long set on a big table, but they're very, very, very close. And then you've got the tier three, where you've got the guys in like the, you know, 760 to 780 Fargo ranges, you know, your Tony Trohans and, you know, things like that. And so I think what's interesting is when you've got people that are one tier separated. And the same holds true for one pocket. Like when Tony Chohan played Josh Filler one pocket, Tony Chohan had a moving edge, and I feel like the moving edge might make up for one tier, but not two. So if Tony Chohan had been playing Clenty Kachi, you know, a guy in the second, you know, well, maybe that's not even maybe true. Maybe that was a poor example. But if Tony Chohan had been playing a guy who's like Jeff DeLuna, like yeah. maybe he could step up one
Twinsies.
Tier, but it's hard to overcome a two-tier jump. You know what I mean? And so how that translates to the bar tables is kind of the same thing. I think I've seen plenty of examples in the past where guys like Jesse Bowman or Scott Frost would try to play top tier players like Shane on a bar table. And it was like, well, equalizer, but no, it doesn't equalize a two tier jump. However, we're not dealing with a two tier jump. Sky Woodward is, you know, solidly in that, you know, second tier. And that's what makes it interesting. Now, when he played Alex, I think Alex has fallen to the second tier, and I love Alex. He was one of my favorite pool players for many years, and he still is. It's just he's not playing top tier anymore.
I'm not sure.
And so I think that when Sky beat day. Alex, I agree with you that he kind of took on the role of like, you know, he kind of has the bar table world championship kind of belts right now, and it is an interesting question is who could beat him. But I think that I got to discount his win against Alex, not because it wasn't phenomenal, but I just think that we got to call a spade and say Alex is not, you know, Sky has more experience and comfort on the bar table than Alex and is now playing just as good as him. Sky could beat Alex on a big table, potentially playing 9-ball right now. So it's like, so he didn't really show that his bar table game is going to be able to overcome a guy a tier higher. So as we go into the Dennis match where he's playing a guy a tier higher, then the question is his comfort on the bar table going to be enough to overcome Dennis's skill edge? And here's where I think that breaks down. Unlike Filler, unlike Gorst, unlike JL Chang, some of these guys you mentioned that don't play bar table, Dennis has been stateside for darn near 20 years. He's been playing a lot of bar pool. He's been playing. I've seen him in bar table tournaments and bar table ring games and bar table championships. And so he's got the comfort level on the bar table. He's used to playing, you know, not just one pocket, but he can play straight pool. He can play full rack eight ball. He can play rotation. And I've seen him play the 15 ball ghost or the 10, I'm sorry, not the 50. I've seen him when he plays like the 10 or 12 ball ghost or whatever, where he soft breaks and leaves everything on one half of the table and just picks everything apart. And it's like, listen, so I think that Dennis is going to be very, very, very comfortable. And in the end, there's going to be enough situations to come up where it's going to be grappling for shots, moving, coming with elevated back cuts and coming with combinations and being able to play shape on the first ball after a combination and hitting windows. And I just think Dennis plays so good right now that the only reason he's not the undisputed money king in the world is because of the break. And after the break, I don't know anybody that gambles really any better than Dennis. And so the only wild card I guess I'll ask is, so I think Dennis is a heavy favorite here. The only wild card that I'm not really sure about is their bar table 10-ball breaks. I know that Dennis's break has been kind of his Achilles heel throughout his career. He's shored up that weakness. It's not going to be as the break's going to be very important on the bar table, but I don't think he's going to struggle with it as much on the bar table. But I don't really know what Sky's 10-ball break looks like on a bar table. What does that look like?
Well, I mean, I'm a 666 Fargo, and I expect to make two balls on the break when I'm breaking Magic Rack 10 ball on a bar table with pro cut pockets. I mean, I expect to make two balls. So if I'm expecting to make two balls, I'm guessing that both of these players are expecting to make three, including probably both wing balls. I don't think the break is going to matter for either of them. I just don't.
Yeah.
I think
the fact that it's on a bar table, I think that instead of having to break like 17 to 22, like they're going to be able to break 16 to 18 and be very, very effective. And I think that that reduces the challenge of the skill of the break. If they can break 17 miles an hour and get great results, then Dennis could shoot it like a shot instead of like a break. And it's going to really, 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 he's going to be practicing it a ton. I think he's going to be able to, you know, maybe Sky has a breaking edge, and at the end of it, maybe he's, you know, maybe it's possible that Sky runs out more racks for his break. But I was trying to run the numbers, and I'm like, Sky, I think, has to run like 20 to 25 more racks from his break than Dennis for the smash to go his way. And I don't see it being that big of a gap.
Ooh, that's a lot.
I would guess that one of these players by the end of this is going to average 1.7 to 2.0 balls on the break, and the other one's going to average like 1.9 to 2.4, something like that. I would expect. I honestly am expecting both of these players to basically only. It wouldn't surprise me a bit if somebody runs a 13 in this, unless the pockets are like crazy, like a trick table where they're like 3 7/8 or something like that. I mean, if this is a standard pro cut table, it wouldn't surprise me a bit if one of these players put together maybe multiple 10 packs.
I don't know that I expect that. I've watched a lot of pool and haven't really seen that many. I mean, I don't know that I've ever seen a 10 pack other than bar table 8 ball. Just because getting a shot at the one, I understand, of course, you're trying to, you know, squat the rock, play the one in front of the corner, but you know, just to not get kissed or not to lose your cue ball a little bit or have something wiggle its way in between or the one ball leaks to the head rail instead of in front of the pocket. It's really, really hard to come up with a shot that many times in a row, if you have the thing stuck.
And I would say I would never expect that for like a race to 50, but this is a race to 150. I mean, that's a lot of pool. I mean...
Well, that's an interesting question. Let's pick what we think the high run is going to be in terms of racks then.
I mean, you always go into this thinking like, you know, even on a big table 10 ball, you expect, I mean, you always predict like 8 or 9 or something like that. And it turns out to be like 5, and it happens like once, but you know, there's multiple 4s. I mean, to be conservative, I would say, I would say I expect a 9. But I mean, my heart tells me like a 11 to 13, something like that. I just think the break is going to be so easy.
I'll go the under. I'd go 6. I think that a 6 is probably the most. I think there's going to be some sessions to 150 where 5's the number. I think there's going to be some where 7 or 8 is done. I think 9 is a high side, and I think 6 is probably the par. That's just my. But I mean, who knows? I mean, I'm just pulling a number out of here. That's my estimate.
I guess I'm
going to go low too.
Yeah, if it's 4.5-inch pockets on a bar table, I just don't see how the break is ever. Yeah, I mean, all right, yeah. I'm sticking to my guns. I think they're going to control that one ball so well. I think they're going to be making that wing ball, and that one ball is going to be sitting nicely up into the top left. And I think the break is going to be completely neutralized. I just think both of these players are so good that if you get an opportunity, if one of these players scratches and you don't turn that into 5 or 6 racks, I don't think you have a prayer in this matchup. So I don't know.
We'll see how it goes. So now, do you want to talk about, I mean, are there nuances of this Dennis and Sky? I mean, we kind of broke it down. I kind of covered a lot of what I had to say. Yeah. Is there anything you wanted to drill down deeper on any part of this game that you think is going to give one player an edge over the other?
Yeah, I do. So we all think Dennis is going to win. Let's give our predictions really quick. I think Dennis is going to win something along the lines of maybe 150 to like 120, something like that. And that basically that turns out to being about a 100 to, I guess the difference is 30, so about 100 to 70, something like that ish, somewhere like that. And I think that's probably, I mean, that's what we've been seeing. You know, maybe that's a little bit low. Maybe it should be more like 80, but I honestly just think that that I just think that Dennis is, you know, he's a grinder. And until he loses one of these matchups that you look at and say, and that's not Shane anyways, until he loses one of these matchups, you know, you kind of said you're from the early 2000s all the way up until basically 2020, you're like, I don't care who he's playing, I'm betting Shane blindly. And I mean, as long as Dennis isn't playing Shane, I'm betting Dennis, because the people who put him into these, I know the people that he puts into, that puts him into these, and they like the locksmith. Some of them do anyway. So they wouldn't be putting him into this game if they didn't feel comfortable with it. So
I think your number is like right on. I was trying to figure it out. Like, I don't, okay, on the very, very low side, I think Sky is almost certain to get past 100, but I can see Sky being held to like in the 117 or 113 if he gets Trellis, but I could easily see him getting like 127, 128. So I think that 120 is like a really, really, really close estimate as to where he's going to finish up. I think he busts through that number. Maybe he gets like 122, 124, something like, just like what you're saying. It's like in that 120 to 125 range, I think it's kind of a, where he's going to finish.
Yeah. Rob, what you thinking?
132.
I love it. He's like, yeah.
132. I think you're going to see some streaks by both of these guys in this event.
Rob says 132, and Dennis is going to finish by shooting a 3-9 combination in the left-hand side. He says how confident he is. He's calling it down to the detail.
Well, it's 10 ball, so...
Yeah, I just think it's 10 ball on a bar table is a mess. I just unless you got a rocket break where you're making 4 or 5 balls every time, it's a mess.
Yeah, I don't know. What did when Jesus played Tyler at Roy's, what was that? You know, both players regularly were running 5s and 6s, right?
Well, I don't think so. I think they were running 2s and 3s with the occasional 4.
Yeah. I mean, I shouldn't say regularly. It wasn't uncommon for them to run a 4 to 6, right?
I would say it wasn't uncommon for them to run a 2 or a 3.
Okay. So, I mean, I would say both of these players are a level of, I would say Dennis is 2, maybe even 3 levels up against Jesus or Tyler. Tyler's probably, you know, 1 level above both of them. But the idea is, I just think on a bar table, I think if you're regularly running 3 and you're 2 levels down, I just don't see how it's not going to be regular 5 to 6 to, and then the occasional spurt of 9 to 10. But anyways, we're past that. So we all kind of feel the 120 to 130 range is where we're at. What does Sky need to do to win this match? What do you think, Rob?
What does he have to do?
Yeah, if he's going to win this match, if he's going to be able to make
he's got to put together. He's got to put together some 7s and 8s. He's got to. I mean, he's not going to win this match if the most he can put together is 3 or 4. He's not going to. He's even more than a 7 or 8. I mean, if he puts a couple strings in there, longer strings, I think he's got a, you know, he's definitely got a better chance. But that's what he has to do. Yeah. You can't pick away at Dennis. You can't with 2s to 3s. It's not going to work.
Yeah. What do you think, Demetrius?
That's a great. I mean, the fact is that the only edge that you can give Sky, if there is an edge, is with the break. And I wouldn't be surprised if there was an edge on the break, because that's where your shot is. But I agree with Rob. He's got to have that break. So specifically to achieve those 7s or 8s, like, he's got to have that break to where he's shooting a stop shot. He's making, you know, both side balls and the 1 ball sitting in front of the corner. And he's doing that, like, not shooting a firm break and pop of the rock and having stuff moving around and arcing to the side rail and out. He's got to have it like completely stuck. I mean, he's got to have that break stuck to the point where it just, anybody that turns on the stream gets disgusted because he's got the same layout and the same ball in the same spot, and he's just cracking in 2 to 3 balls. The 1's sitting up, the 2 and 3 are sitting in front of the corners because he can take enough speed off it to leave them 4 rails in front of those corners if they don't go, and just literally have the same. Like, it needs to look like Corey Duell beating Mika Immonen 11-0 in the finals at US Open. It's got to, like, the viewers have to be, like, complaining in the chat about how boring the game is and how stupid the break rules are.
Are they using the magic rack?
Yeah, and that's what Sky needs to have the viewers complaining and logging off because the game is so stupid looking because he has it so solved. That's what he needs to do.
Interesting.
That wouldn't hurt.
That's a really interesting take. All right, I think like you said, I think Sky is in that second tier, but he's kind of at the middle to maybe even upper middle of that second tier. Dennis is quite firmly in the first tier. So can Sky win this outright? If it's just kind of like a nip and tuck back and forth? No, because Dennis is eventually just going to pull away, right? I mean, you always see these, you know, it's March Madness. They just finished up last night, and it's kind of like the UCLA and Gonzaga game for anybody out there that's sports fans. You kind of get those like middling teams that they just kind of seem to hang around. But, you know, once crunch time comes, it just seems like the better teams pull away. And it's such a surprise when they don't. And that's why I think that game was so amazing between UCLA and Gonzaga. But normally they hang around till about 7 or 8 minutes left, and then the better team just pulls away. And that's just kind of how this works. So I don't think Sky can get in one of those nip and tucks. I think Sky needs to come out. And he needs to win the first day, and he's got to win the first day convincingly, like a 50-35 type of winning. And then the second day, he's got to come out strong again from the get go. He can't, because Dennis is going to come out firing in the second day if he's down. And it's so hard, probably the hardest thing in pool, I think, is going into that second day with a big advantage and holding it. If you're not the best player, we saw when Didi and Joshua Filler played, and Didi had an actual lead on the first day, like 33-27 or something like that. If maybe one of you guys can fact check me.
Yeah, something like 33-20. He was up like, you know, 7-10 games or something. 36-29, something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
And then the first thing Joshua Filler comes out is, you know, he makes up the deficit and then a few, like in the first hour. I mean, Dennis is going to be looking to do that. Sky has got to stomp that out, and he's even got to put a little bit more on him. He's got to get him to the point where Dennis is back on his heels, and he's playing to not lose as opposed to, you know, win the match. And I think if Sky can come out, get a good lead on the first day, and stomp out that surge from Dennis on the second day, and on day three, of course, because it'll happen again.
Yeah, because look at what Dennis did to Shane. I mean, that's exactly, yeah. Shane's a level above Sky, and he did that to Dennis on day one and on day two, and still Dennis shit. And not only did he outscore him those first 2 days, but Shane in that 9-ball game had the break. We're better. He was running out more racks. He was outplaying Dennis. He's outbreaking Dennis. He's outscoring Dennis. He's got one both days. He's got a big lead, and still. Not only, you know, like Dennis still found a way to mix it up, step up his break, put a ton of heat on Shane, and keep fighting. I mean, the amount of heart we talked about, the amount of heart that Dennis displayed in that, it's like, I just feel like there's only one way. There's nothing that Sky is going to be able to do that's going to stomp Dennis out. His only chance is to just win all 3 days and just race to 150 and just get there first. You know, Dennis is not going to waver at all, so he better just get there first, you know?
Which one of these players do you guys think is mentally tougher when they're down? One Dennis. Of you guys get down by 15, 20 games either one of the 3 days.
The answer to this question is always the white, blue, and red with a little bit of yellow. The answer is always the Philippines, right? I mean, it's not the red, white, and blue. It's the red, white, and blue with a little bit of yellow. It's the Philippines always have the mental edge on just about everybody. And I think I've talked about this in the past. I think when you play the game in the U.S., we play the game because we love it and we try to turn that into a career. In the Philippines, they play it to survive, right? And when you're playing a game to survive and you play it like literally to feed your family, and like if you don't, your family won't eat, you can't go get another job somewhere else. I mean, you're always going to be more mentally resilient because to get to the point where you're playing like a Dennis, you've already gone through all of the mental hurdles needed to become a champion. I don't think it's just a completely different stimulus in the U.S. It just requires different mental fortitude. And I think the Filipinos will always have that edge as long as, you know, they're basically a third world country.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, that's why Moscone was such a tough competitor. He grew up in the Depression and all that. And I've seen it, man. I've played the Filipinos, and it's like I've played them in tournaments, and I've played them for money, and there's a huge difference. It's kind of like the tournaments. It's just it kind of shackles their ability to really wield that edge, because when you're racing to 11, nobody ever feels that stuck, and it just doesn't happen that often. And so, therefore, their ability to play on their back and come from behind and play from hopeless situations, they're never that hopeless, and you're never that hopeless. So their resilience is never really utilized to its fullest. You play them in a money game. I still remember, I don't know if I shared this, but I played a guy. He was not a top-tier Filipino player, but he was a very good one. And we played a race to 15 for a good chunk of change. And I was playing airtight, had the guy down 6-1, and I blinked, and it was like he beat me 15-8. And it was like he played like Bustamante's best day ever. He played like that for the rest of the set. And it was like, and I mean, what I did to not only get a 5-game lead, but the level of pool I was laying down, like I had him in his chair for 6 racks. And he smiled, and he actually said it, meant it. He wasn't just saying this as gamesmanship. He said, "I like a challenge." And he came on, he was like enjoying himself. And it's like, he really liked it, you know? And it's like, for them, the game doesn't even start until you're down on your back. And so, so meanwhile, you look at Sky, and I'm not going to, like, now I don't want to badmouth anyone. I'll just say that I've played Sky. I've sat next to other of my friends that have played Sky and at tournaments, and I've watched Sky, and I haven't seen that demonstrated from him. And now for this much money and this much at stake, I'm not saying he's going to like give up or break down his queue, but like, I haven't seen that same thing from Sky. Meanwhile, in terms of like gambling and conditioning, and there's another thing, it's like, who's been in more action? I mean, Dennis just beat Shane a couple months ago, and he's been matching up and playing tournaments. I feel like Sky, I'd rather not say anything than say anything bad. I just don't think he's been trained. Like, I think he's probably more likely hanging out and you know, at the bar than training and really working on his game. That's all.
That tournament tough.
And I might be wrong, and I don't want to maybe I overstated that. Maybe I don't mean it quite as harsh as that came off. I don't think he's been in action like Dennis has.
That's an accurate assessment, I think, Demi. Yeah.
On a side note, how old do you think Dennis is? Like, how old do you think Dennis is?
42, 43.
Man, I honestly thought he was like not Boosty's age, but like just a little bit behind him. I thought he was like 46, maybe 47. He's only 42. That's
he's not over the hill yet.
Or I guess he's 43 now. I guess he turned on this year already. But that's man, he's still got 4 or 5 more years of elite pool, especially with how much he's playing. That's crazy.
Yeah. Is he married?
That I don't know. I have no clue. Do you know, Demetrius?
I mean, just based on how he shoots pool, I'd have to say no.
Well, I was going to ask that. I was going to bring that up. What amount of factoring do you think it takes to have a supportive spouse if you're going to be a professional pool player?
You know, that's changed over the years, Rob. I think if you look back, you know, what a professional pool player meant in the 60s, 70s was a road player that's gambling around and doing things that they shouldn't be doing. And so I don't think marriages were real sustainable in those decades for the top players. I think that as pool has translated to kind of a more formal tournament playing, you know, kind of on the up and up, even the money matches are like on posters with kind of like tournament rules and, you know, visibility and pay-per-views. I think guys like, you know, Filler and stuff that are getting married, I think there's, you know, Tyler Steyer, congratulations, just got engaged to Margaret. So it's like, I think that there's room now for tournament players to kind of be more professional, and I think there's room for them to kind of have a partner. So I just think that Dennis is in the old school group of the players that it just didn't really, there wasn't really a good fit for that type of relationship.
Yeah, I can remember having the talk with my wife after we'd been married about 5 or 6 years, and I was noticing when I was gone for weekends and I'd come home, and even if I came home and gave her some cash, it's still by Tuesday or Wednesday, she'd still be a little bit irritated that I was gone again all weekend, you know, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday another time. And then we had the talk. Do you know what I mean by that?
Well, go on.
Well, the talk is explaining that in order for two people to coexist together, they both have to be reasonably happy. If one of them is not, that's probably not going to last a long time. And what I explained to her was that in order for me to be reasonably happy, I have to go play pool. I have to. It's not a maybe. It's not okay just a once in a while. It's just this is what I need to do. So we need to come to an understanding. That was the talk, that you need not to get on my case for going and playing pool. If you do, then I'm not going to be happy. And now one of us then is not happy. Even though you're not happy for 2 or 3 days after I go play, I'm not going to be happy any of the time. And once she heard me say that, she was okay. She, after that talk, not one time did I ever come back from a tournament where she was irritated that I went and played.
Yeah, it makes sense. I'm not, you know, unfortunately, you know, I was in an area when it comes to talking pool, I feel very confident. When it starts coming to marriage, I have to know, what I'm outgunned here and steer away. But okay, so I've got a really interesting question. I think this one's interesting.
Can I let me cut
okay,
you off?
Go ahead, Nate, go ahead.
Because this is a really interesting thing. I'm on Dennis Arcoyo's Wikipedia page, and it kind of goes back to the Sky and Dennis conversation, or the point that I really had made about like the Filipinos play because there's no other option in their life. Like they play to survive, and pool players play because they enjoy it and they're trying to turn it into a living. This is the early life of Dennis Arcoyo on Wikipedia. Dennis is the second of four brothers. His father was killed in a boating accident caused by a windstorm when he was young. He started practicing pool at 8 years of age through his grandfather's table. Because of financial problems, he gave up school at third grade and focused on the sport. When you're a third grader and you're dropping out of school so that you can focus on your profession, so that you can survive. I mean, it's different. It's just absolutely different. And you have to have a level of mental fortitude just to survive in that type of atmosphere that you'll never even be experienced as an American player. It's just a different country. It's just a different culture.
I agree. And now I want to, I hesitate to say, I'm going to share this. I just want to make it clear. Like, I'm sorry that Dennis's upbringing was that hard, that he had that loss of his father, and that he had to go this road. So what I'm saying is in no way making light of that situation. It's more of a joke about me as a dad. So when I was raising, I'm raising kids, and I had a daughter that was competitive in something, and I was trying to figure out, like, what can I do to, you know, make her the best in the world and all this. I'm like, what if I faked my own death and left her a note just saying, you know, like some kind of video or something saying, if you get this, I'm my last wish just for you to be the best in the world. And then she, like, trains like crazy to try to not let me down. And then she's having her, like, she's at the Olympics winning the gold medal. I just show up and I'm like, good job, honey. It was all part of this. And I'm, anyway, I'm up. If you need to cut that out, you can. But anyway, I'm just gonna,
Demi, yeah. You gotta calm your mind down, Demi.
I didn't do it, Rob. I didn't do it. Okay.
What actually happens out of that, Rob, is, you know, he gives the video to his daughter, and she pops it in the DVD player, and, you know, Demetrius is in the other room just listening to what, you know, her reaction's going to be, and she gets done with it, and there's like about a 30-second pause, and she's like, "Fine, I can probably finally stop playing this stupid game."
Yeah. And I walk back in. Oh, no, you don't, young lady. Okay, so here's my question, Dave,
okay, yeah,
for you.
So, and
you
so
no, but I 100% agree with your point. I mean, it's just, and it's not Sky's fault. It's not our fault. It's just, that's just the reality. And that's the constant challenge, by the way, when you are raising kids in all seriousness. It's like you want to provide for them and make it so that their lives aren't unduly difficult at the same time. You don't want them to be soft and weak, and you want them to be prepared for the difficulty that's inevitable in life. And it's a hard, hard, hard balance to navigate. And it's, that's a pretty, it's a tough problem, but anyway, it's a good point.
And oh, yeah. When my kids were between the ages of 4 and 12, I didn't go to any pool tournaments. So that's like 9 years. I quit playing because that family came first.
Well, but I
there
wasn't
was a period
about,
of time, you know, that.
Yeah, I wasn't talking about that. I wasn't talking about the family pool balance, though, Rob. I was talking about the balance of when you raise kids, wanting them to be grow up tough, yet without wanting them to have to live in a tough way. Like, you want them to grow up where you want them to grow up as tough as the kids that grew up on the street and had to, like, you know, hustle to get their, you know, their meal and stuff. You want them to have that kind of thick skin, survival instinct, toughness, mental fortitude, but you don't want them to be hungry either. So it's like, that's the balance I'm talking about.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But okay, so my question, if we had 100 parallel universes where this match went down, how many of them does Sky win, the 150? How many of those universes does Sky get there?
20.
Well, can we frame it to is that they just played it 100 times? Because I don't know what the parallel universes entail. Is Sky a better player in some of those?
So you just don't think it's possible? Like, in any of the universes, there's not one time where it plays out where Sky wins.
In the idea of string theory, there is a universe out there where Sky and Dennis are flip flopped, and you know Sky is a better pool player. Then I think Sky wins.
That's really weird. Keep the math out of this.
Yeah, well, I was just going on. Let's just say that we're talking about the universes that branch once the coin is flipped.
So you're basically just saying, like, if we could run a computer simulation of 100 times of them playing, or just watch them play 100 times back to back to back to back, how many times do you think you could win?
Yeah.
Well, so I'm going to bring out my mathematician here. I think if I go off of my prediction, which is 150 to 120 ish, I would say the standard deviation would be about, let's say, 12 games. So if there's 12 games in there, that means that he is nearly 3 standard deviations away from winning the match. The statistical probability of, on the bell curve, of 3 standard deviations is 99.6%. So he would have a 0.04% chance of winning. Or, sorry, 0.4% chance of winning. So if you ran 100, he would win a half a game. He would win half a match. I mean, just breaking down.
That's brutal.
That's pretty brutal. Well, I mean, there's a lot of assumptions being made. But if it's 30 games, right, and a standard deviation being 12 games, that's a lot. I mean, for anybody that's super
math. So you just made the point, though. That's a lot of assumptions being made. I don't think – if our assumptions are correct, I don't think he's going to win any of the 100. But if our – I mean, maybe one. But, like, if the question is, what are the odds that our assumptions are wrong? What are the odds that Sky shows up with a break where he's making 3 balls and setting the one up and putting together, you know, 8 to 10 racks an inning? Like, what if – you know what I mean? What if Dennis absolutely can't make a ball – or can't get balls going on the break and he's just completely lost for 2 days and Sky, you know, runs – you know, 40 to 50%. Sky runs 68 racks from his break, and Dennis only runs 25. I mean, what if that happens? Like, you know, who knows? Like, I think that there's a chance that, you know, we're overlooking something here, and I don't know what that chance is.
I believe,
but I would say, I think Rob's at 20%. I'm not going to give up 4-1 of the money on Dennis. I know somebody that's offering 2-1 of the money on Dennis.
Well, and 20 games, that's not 20%. So.
Well, no, but listen, if somebody's offering 2-1 on the money, that means that if Dennis wins, that means if Sky wins 33% of the time, he's breaking even. He's not offering 2-1 of the money to break even. So that means he thinks that Sky is less than 33%. So he does think that, like, Sky is drawing nearly dead. To give up 2-1, you got to think the other guy is drawing dead. Basically, you got to figure if pretty I much. think, like, you're basically thinking like Nate, which is, if I'm correct, Sky is drawing dead, and there's a small chance I'm not correct. That's what that means.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting conversation. I mean, I'm creating basically, if you get down to the point where you have to make an assumption off of where do you think the match is regularly, and then what do you think a standard deviation is, and then the rest of it is it's very, you know, it's very, very calculable. If we think if we think Rob is if Rob is right at 132, for example, and it's still one standard deviation, well, then he only needs about he needs to be in about the 44th percentile to where he starts winning. So the 44th percentile means that he'll win 36% of the time, you know, something like that. And that's, you know, that's more, and I should say it's about 36% because it's not linear. So it'd be a quadratic relationship, but you know, if Rob's right at 132, then he's got about a 36% chance. And if you're right at 123, you're at about 1%. So, I mean, for any of the math nerds out there, anybody who has taken some statistics or probability courses would maybe follow along with that.
Well, actually, the problem, though, is that Sky, before he can get to 150, he has to get to half of 150. And before he can get to 75, he's got to get half of the way to 75. And no matter what destination, he's always got to get halfway there first. And there's an infinite number of halfways, and therefore he can never get to 150. So I just think we bet Dennis.
So actually, that would converge. That would actually converge via calculus. So I can actually prove that he would get there via that way.
Nice.
But I'd have to sit down.
We'll save that for another episode, Nate.
It's all about convergence, baby. All about that calculus. I'm actually looking up right now just out of curiosity, so you guys can ad lib, talk about something. I'm gonna see what this looks like.
Well, I think this the Tyler Steyer engagement to Margaret is just a wonderful thing. We're gonna be able to witness as fans of the sport a marriage made in heaven. I think, you know, if they do get married and everything works out, and we're gonna see, you know, a couple of top notch pool player, husband and wife teams who promote the game beautifully, I would say. You know, we're starting to give, you know, like partner lessons to kids, and they're doing little mini boot camps like you are, Demi, and that kind of thing. This is going to be a good thing for pool. And he's not going to be married to somebody that's going to whine and cry if he goes to a pool tournament.
Because she'll be there too.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's not going to happen. So this is cool. I mean, when I read that, when I saw that, I thought, oh, boy, all right. Okay, let's see how this goes. I was happy for them, in other words.
So let's see here. We have 817 is Dennis's Fargo. And, of course, this doesn't always mean anything, but 797. And let's say they're going to play a race to...
So there's 19 Fargo points separating these two?
Yeah, so according to Fargo rate, it's about one game per every 13 that Sky would need. So 150.
We're a little over one game then.
150 divided by 13. So it'd be about 12 games in a race to 150, according to this.
Yeah, but Fargo rate's not going to factor in the level of despair that Sky is dealing with by the middle of day two.
No, I agree with that.
There should be a tab on Fargo rate that has an adjustment that says, is this person getting their teeth kicked in by Dennis Arcolo? And if you flip that tab, it recalibrates the stats.
Savage. 797. According to this, in a race to 75, Sky has a 20% chance of winning. A race to 75, even up.
20%? Is that
20%?
So it's got it. So yeah. that would be 1 in 5 twice. He needs to be 1 in 25. Then is that right to get to 150?
It's not a linear
because
relationship.
If he wins to 75, then he has an edge going on the second set. Sorry.
Yeah. It's not a linear relationship. We'll see what the highest he can go in this. They need to increase this. Oh, that's not going to work either. Well, anyways, we can move on from this. In a race to 85, Sky has an 18% chance, so it's going down fast.
But you know what, though? If it was 20% to 75, let's just say that of the times he wins the race to 75, that he wins half of the other sets to 75. Like, he gets there. Let's just say that if he has a lead by 75, he closes it out half the time. Which I think that's fair to say, because if he gets to 75, then why can't he do it again? And especially with an edge of games, you know, he's got a head start. So therefore, if he wins half the times that he gets to 75 first, then he's 20% to win, like Rob said. And I think that that's, you know,
no, I think that, no,
probably
that,
not that far off. That,
no, that's definitely not right, because he only has a 20% chance of winning it. So he has a 50% or he has an 80% chance of losing the next one. And he has an even, you know, if he's going
to
win.
But he's got a lead, though, because he's up 75.
Correct.
To 65.
But that's what I'm about
to
get to.
Then he's no longer 20% to win this.
Dennis can beat Sky 70 to 60 a lot easier than Sky can beat Dennis 70 to 60. So if Sky wins to 75, he's probably winning like 75 to 70, where Dennis would win the next set then like 75 to 60. And then he wins by 10 games. So neither here nor there. We're really getting down a rabbit hole that doesn't even probably need to be broached at this point.
Fair enough.
Let's close it out. So I guess, is there anything else that we wanted to talk about here with this matchup?
No, I think that we've explored it. But you know what? We've got some good things to look for, which is going to be, you know, Sky's break. We're going to see what the packages are, how quick the game pace is, and how Sky handles, you know, how both players handle the lead and the deficits. I think that's what we've got to look for. So tune into that match, and it should be fun.
It's going to be interesting to watch that, whether the power break versus the controlled break.
Oh, it's going to be a song. It's going to be
on the bar table. You know?
It's going to be 16.8 miles an hour.
You think so? So it's more control. You think that's going to be the better break here?
That might even be a little high. It wouldn't surprise me a bit if they come out at like 15, just enough to get those wing balls down, and not even getting the two and the three ball around for the four rails, but just keeping them up by the one ball. It wouldn't surprise me a bit if the wing balls are going into the side pocket, that they're hitting a speed where those two and the three balls stay on the same side as the one ball.
Could be, yeah.
And then they'll rack the four ball right next to they'll rack the four and the five right next to the two and the three, so they both bank up table, so the four and the five are down there with it too. Wouldn't surprise me a bit. We'll see. I mean that's what we'll be looking for, right? I mean that's the joys of watching it. So, like I said, today's the last day that you can get it. It's from Rackham TV, and today's the last day for the early bird special, which is $24.95, and then it goes up to I think $29.95. So it's $5 more. Still, regardless, it's 3 days of great pool action, and
but
should
how
be fun.
Are you going to be able to watch it?
Oh, I'm going to set up a TV at my booth.
Oh. Okay.
Hex, yeah.
I'll tell you, Nate's shooting so good, Rob. It wouldn't surprise me if Dennis had a TV set up of Nate in his corner. That'd be pretty sick, man. Dennis, you know, it's almost like the thing about, you know, the boogeyman checks his closet for Chuck Norris, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, Nate's got some skills. He does.
I'm good, man.
Stop it, both of you guys. I'll tell you what. I've probably missed less balls than both of you in the last week, because I don't think I've hit a ball in the last week.
Well, I can't say the same. I have. I'm wearing out the rails. I'm telling you, the glue's coming off. I'm firing them in so hard.
I actually played in the end of league tournament. That's basically just a singles event, and I lost my first match, and I end up getting back to the finals, and. Greg and I decide that we're just going to chop it. Greg Andler, teammates. We're teammates in the league, so we're just going to chop it. But we're like, well, we gotta take pictures to see who's going to win the event. So, and it's like midnight, so we're like, well, let's just flip a coin. Three out of five, because it's just a race to five. So three out of five for the first set, and if I win it, then we'll do two out of three for the second set, and you can call it. And I flip five coins. He calls heads five times in a row. You want to guess how many times it was tails?
None.
It was, well, I won all five of the flips. It was tails,
oh,
five
you did.
Times in a row.
Nice.
So I won the first set 3-0,
when
the second
chop
set 2-0.
Somebody, if you are on the winner's side where they have to double dip you, do you automatically get first? Do you flip a coin to see who wins it on paper? Or do you flip a coin and they have to beat you two coin flips?
That's what we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we flipped three out of five coins for the first set and two out of three for the second set for the double dip if I got there.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, do we have anything we want to discuss as far
unless there's like
parameters. I love it.
Unless there's a Calcutta, in which case you figure out who you don't like, you know, and then you just make them take the second place. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, I'm getting a little far afield. Sorry, guys.
Well, that's the second case. The first case is who has the most of themselves, and then, you know, and then they work it out between the,
right.
That's American.
Oh, man.
That's American.
All right.
All right. Well, is there any discussion topic we want to talk about? I don't have anything personally.
No, I actually, I'll let the listeners know, though, I did record a podcast with Josh yesterday, so I'm not going to, I think we post this one first, and then I'll post the one with Josh a couple days later. So that one, we have some good conversation about how to handle it when you're playing, when you're having a bad day, like how to, you know, how to look at it, how to manage that, and then a couple of good listener questions about some other things. So that'll be coming a couple days. So once you hear this, please, if you haven't listened to Josh and I jamming, you can tune in for that.
And actually, we have tomorrow, Albin Ocean is going to record with Mike Howerton as well. So you'll have that coming in your feeds very soon, too, which is that's a beautiful thing.
That's really cool. That's really, really cool.
Yeah. So lots of good stuff coming up. I will probably be MIA, although I do have a something in the works with just a friend of mine that he's got an interesting pool story. And off air, maybe I'll tell you guys it just because it's kind of interesting. And I'm going to record a podcast with him and just tell his story in pool. I think it's going to be a pretty rewarding one for a lot of listeners. So that's what's coming down the pike.
That's what we need. We need to reward the listeners. Holy crap. For listening.
Oh, we just went over 1 hour. Dang it. We could have gotten
done. Our shortest pod ever. Yeah.
Shortest one in a year. All right. Well, let's close it up.
You could edit it. Yeah, No. We're going to do it legit. We're going to do it legit someday.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thanks for joining me again. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And you'll be having some more stuff in the future, but we'll be back next week.
See y'all.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard and you want to contribute to the future content that will be made, consider joining the podcast's Patreon at www.patreon.com/queueitup. Becoming a Patreon of the podcast will help to create all of the future content that the podcast will have. Special shout out to Dave Peters, Aaron Taylor, Pete Silsby, Morgan Lupton, Ben Young, Robert Miller, Andy Morse, and Bill Pelham for your generous contributions to the podcast's Patreon. If you ever need any more information on what the Patreon system is or how you can contribute outside of the Patreon, please reach out to the podcast or Nate himself. If you would like to contribute to the podcast for free, consider sharing any podcasts or the podcast page on Facebook itself. Also, leaving a review and a rating if you listen through iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Cue It Up podcast.